Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 75, and we got a roaring response, Dave, to our email podcast. And as I mentioned, we'll try to do more of that here this offseason, particularly in the slow time kind of between the Super Bowl and a free agency as we build into the draft after that. And we heard from people in Denmark, in the UAE, various other countries around the world. So always fun to get those emails. Keep them coming, and we will do our best to get to them. But David, is Super Bowl week, and not a lot of news, but a little bit of news on the Steeler front. So let's have at it. You getting ready for Super Bowl week? What's your level of interest in this game versus the average Super Bowl where the Steelers are not a participant?
Well, obviously pay a little less attention to media days. I'll have it running in the background here coming up this week. But I am interested to see the game. I mean, especially to see what the Falcons do to try to limit the effectiveness of one Tom Brady. There's been a few articles written about how the Falcons ought to utilize more man press coverage, something the Steelers didn't do in the AFC Championship game. And then, of course, on the other side, be interesting to see how that high-powered Atlanta Falcons offense, you know, if they can keep that going against a Patriots defense that I do believe is exploitable in the passing game. So, yeah, I'm like any other Super Bowl, I'm quite interested to see how this one plays out.
Yeah, I am too, and I got been asked a couple times over the last 24 hours what I expect to happen, and honestly, I don't think I have a clear answer. I expect the Falcons to be able to move the ball. And I guess the unit that I'm most uncertain about of the four units in this game is Atlanta's defense. I think New England's defense is pretty good. I don't think they're great, but I certainly don't think they're bad. And both offenses, I think, are very good. And I just can't decide if I think Atlanta's defense is pretty good or not. And so that to me is kind of the where I'm going to go in terms of how I'm going to look at this game. But Should be an entertaining week into it. And, of course, the Roger Goodell, Tom Brady thing has already gotten too much publicity in terms of, you know, if Goodell has to hand the trophy to Brady, you know, how's that going to go? You know, it's going to go just fine. Of course, it'll keep people talking for hours until we get to the game.
Are you rooting for Atlanta?
Yes.
I am too. And I think most people listening to this podcast are indeed rooting for the Falcons as well. So.
And you know, I know you've been a Matt Ryan fan kind of most of his career, and I haven't been. And certainly, you know, his play. And, you know, one of the things that's good about sports, and I think one of the things that we should all learn in sports and in life, is you're allowed to change your opinion. And Matt Ryan certainly won me over at the beginning of this season with his play, and he's been great throughout. I don't think Matt Ryan's got a bust in Canton yet, but if he wins this and goes on for five more years, I couldn't believe, Dave, when I saw that, you know, Matt Ryan's been in the league 10 years. I mean, I still feel like he's coming out of BC like 3 years ago, but certainly deserved of everything that he's achieved. And when they do finally announce the MVP, good gracious, when's that going to come out? I imagine it will, you know, it'll be Matt Ryan's.
How much longer do you think Tom Brady's going to play?
I put the over-under at 3 years. He's going to be back next year, obviously. And I don't see, you know, I've read so much on Tom Brady and Bill Belichick over the last month. I feel like, I feel like I know what's going on anyway. Why not keep playing? He's not having the Ben Roethlisberger discussion, so Yeah. I'll put the over under at 3. What do you got?
Yeah, I would think at least that. Heck, they're in a great salary cap situation entering the offseason here as well. And we all know that if you have a good quarterback and you're gonna have a chance each and every year to compete. And you know, it'll be interesting to see how they spend some of that money during free agency. And you know they will. And you know, although their draft picks probably can be chopped down, you know, their draft success, I should say, can be chopped down. Bill Belichick has no issues of shaking things up on the fly, and he did it again this year. So, yeah, 3 years. the road is going to continue to go through New England if you're a Steelers fan.
Yep, it is. And you know, I just – you wonder – what's going to derail this team? I mean, obviously anybody at any point in time in the playoffs can have a bad game and that can knock you out. But it, again, you look at their division and you can't see the Jets being good this coming year with their quarterback situation and kind of, you know, the overhaul of the roster that they're likely to undergo this offseason. You know, you don't know where to go with the Bills with their coaching situation now and their quarterback situation, even though I think there's some talent on that roster. You thought it was going to be the defense that would carry them, not the offense, and it really wasn't. The defense wasn't very good this year. And then, you know, Miami's a bit of a wild card making the playoffs, but I don't think anybody thinks they're a particularly good team. And they're probably a team that's due to take a step back next year. So, I mean, how many of the AFC East have they won in a row? Something insane, like 14? I mean, it's just, you know, it certainly wouldn't – I don't think anybody's going to be picking the parade to stop next year.
This will probably help us transition into one of the topics we want to get to today. But Kevin Green, the Jets hired him to be their outside linebackers coach. What do you think?
Yeah. I'm putting this squarely in your camp. You know, you get a participation trophy for – getting Kevin Green back in the game and on the radar. Certainly the Porter situation when it happened on the south side and you brought it up and I had no idea what Kevin Green was doing, let alone what his kid was doing. Yeah, you know, good for him. He wanted to get back in and he got a spot. So
yeah, I take no credit for any of that. I just happened to, check in on him on Twitter at the time and, you know, during the whole Joey Porter thing. And I think it was, you started to put two and two together. And for anybody who saw the football life on Kevin Green, you could see that, he obviously took time away, after leaving the, Green Bay Packers to spend time with his kids and, specifically his eldest son, who at the time I believe was in high school. He has since recruited by Southern Miss there. So I think Kevin Green has that behind him now, has his oldest son in college playing football, and the juices were still flowing and he wanted to get back into the game. And I think he made that kind of public on his Twitter account there along the lines when Joey Porter came to the forefront, and here we are about 2 weeks later, and he's with the Bills now. So I guess it's a perfect time to start talking a little bit more about Joey Porter, huh?
Yeah, so the Joey Porter situation, look, in the way I look at this story in terms of, you know, the things we talk about or don't talk about on the podcast, it's a little bit like the story last week that I told you about Le'Veon Bell, where is I was told that Le'Veon Bell flew to California before kind of that came out publicly. And, you know, I don't have a second, third, fourth source. But, you know, when we're talking on the podcast, it's not necessarily what things are about. You know, Dave and I try to assess what we hear and what we think is true, and then, you know, whether it's been reported or not and kind of what the reaction to those things is. And, I don't know if Le'Veon Bell has admitted to having a child yet, but, you know, we talked about the fact that this whole Le'Veon Bell situation and whether, you know, now that the NFL is going to look into it, that's no surprise. And I brought it up to Mike on the Tuesday, you know, at his press conference, and we talked about it on the podcast before that, you know, he apparently had gone to California, and yet he came back and told people that he didn't have a kid and was surprised people were saying congratulations. And now that it appears all not to be true. Now, you know, it's one of those kind of white lies that nobody's really harmed by it. But it just confuses the whole situation, and it didn't seem to make – you know, I don't think it was the most prudent course of action for Le'Veon Bell. and then the injury kind of mixes all of this stuff up of why he wasn't at practice and what was the occasion. Now, obviously, he has a great, you know, as legitimate an excuse as you can have, but it's just, it's those types of things. And I couldn't remember if in the Joey Porter story about North Catholic, if I had talked about it on the podcast. Again, it's a story that I'd heard from somebody I find credible, but, you know, I didn't know all the details, and I talked about it on my show, but I guess we didn't talk about it on the podcast. But John Steigerwald wrote about it this week, and you can read it in the Indiana Gazette or the Beaver County Times, about Joey going to North Catholic. And the background of the story, Dave, you obviously know, is Jason Gilden, the Steeler linebacker, was hired at North Catholic to be the football coach 2 years ago. Art Rooney II went to North Catholic. Kevin Colbert went to North Catholic and currently sits on the board of directors. Mike Tomlin's kids go to North Catholic, went to North Catholic. Jason Gilden's sons went there, and Joey Porter, his son and a nephew, went to North Catholic. They played last year. I can't remember what the record was last year, but they were 6-5 this year. Trust me, in the second year as a football coach at a school like North Catholic with a winning record, you do not get fired unless there is grounds for firing. And I have heard that – I have heard it said off the record that, you know, from somebody through the grapevine kind of that Jason Gilden was, you know, the worst coach that North Catholic had had association with in any sport. So they fired him. And it had come out over the course of this past year that Joey Porter and Mike Tomlin had gone to some football games, that there had been instances at games where their behavior, Joey's behavior, this is specific to Joey now, Joey's behavior was way over the line. You know, whether it was arguing with opposing players' parents, in one instance, arguing with officials where apparently he got flagged and, you know, the officials told the police to remove him from the premises, and he said something to them, and then, you know, it was something along the lines of, it's going to take more than you guys to get me out of here, which is insane. You know, they called for a backup, and they threatened North Catholic with a forfeiture of the game, and then some other minor instances around that. But you would think that instance in itself is massive in terms of how they would react. I also was told, it wasn't in the story, that there was a call placed from somebody senior at North Catholic to Kevin Colbert to appraise him of the situation. So that's the background to the story. That all happened, obviously, before the incident on the south side that is the more recent story about Joey Porter. So the Steelers welcomed Joey back relatively quickly for that Miami game, and he finished the season with them. And Mike has yet to discuss his staff issues, if there are going to be any changes to his staff. And Dave, so it all comes now down to, this is probably in a great time for this story to get out for Joey. The principals who are going to decide on his job future obviously already knew about this story, so it's not necessarily new news to him. Do they care about public perception? Should this impact Joey Porter's job status? What's your take on the whole situation?
I think it's unfortunate, and you definitely look, I think you would, if you're a high-profile guy such as Joey Porter, especially being a part of the Steelers coaching staff, you would think that you would want to keep a low profile in situations such as that. I understand him being passionate about, you know, the North Catholic football program, and but you hate to hear that he's one of those dads, if you will. You know, and I know he's not the only one, but you know, that does that across America. But he is high profile. I'm surprised we haven't had video of this surface on YouTube or Twitter or you know these actions that Steigerwald reported in his story. So it's unfortunate. I kind of, knowing what I know, and it's just what's out there that everybody else knows at this point, it doesn't look good for Joey Porter. And you can go into looking at the performance of the Steelers outside linebackers since Joey Porter has become the coach and start, you know, using that as part of the evaluation process. But none of this looks great. And it also reflects bad on Mike Tomlin, being as how I think Steigerwald says there's a couple times where Tomlin's alongside of Joey Porter along the fence line, right? This doesn't look good. And look, I understand Joey's history with the Steelers and you know how some people revere him as still possibly being a great coach and maybe is, but to be quite honest with you, it wouldn't hurt my feelings if the Steelers moved on from him.
I'm with you. I don't know in and of itself if it's a fireable offense to do what Joey did. Certainly Mike Tomlin, you would think, got in his grill. You would hope, I guess, that I don't even know what to say about that kind of behavior as a public figure, you know, a representative of the Steelers kind of everywhere you go in the presence of your head coach, at a football game, a high school football game. It's really, really odd to me. And you just wonder if there are bigger issues with Joey that need to be sorted out. You know, you put all these things together and Joey better be one hell of a coach in my mind to be kept on the staff at this point. And, you know, it's not a good look for Mike Tomlin. And, you know, as I say, I don't want to implicate Mike in any of this, but he was standing against the fence. And apparently when asked to move, they weren't quick to move. Let's put it that way. There's another very minor thing about smoking a cigar in a non-smoking stadium. I mean, you know, it's just rude. It's just rude. And, maybe they didn't know it was not, they're outside at a football game. And there are a lot of places where, you know, there are not many. I don't know the rules on all stadium, high school football stadiums about smoking when you're outside. You would think if you're outside, generally, I think people assume you can smoke. So maybe they didn't understand the rules. But again, if people had to move and maybe mentioned it to them and they didn't follow the rules, that's not good stuff. So again, this isn't about Mike. In my book, this is not at all about Mike. This is all about Joey. All the kids transferred schools. Mike's kids went to Shadyside. They enrolled this past week. I know that because I went there, and I know plenty of people. My brother's children go there now, and I know plenty of people whose kids go there. So I know something about what's going on that front. The other kids, Joey and Jason, live in the North Allegheny School District, so their kids went to North Allegheny. If you're thinking about it, clearly Mike's chosen to associate with Joey and spend time with him. So I don't know that it will at all impact Mike's decision making. But it's certainly an interesting story, and would be interested to hear what our listeners think about whether this is something you just kind of wave by and say, you know, look, everybody kind of has issues along the way. If Joey's a good coach, you keep him around, or if these types of things are kind of all taken together are enough to, you know, make you want to move on from Joey Porter.
I think too we're kind of at a crossroads too with the Steelers outside linebackers as well, right? I mean, you got I think most of us like the chances of James Harrison returning again for the 2017 season. As we sit here today, currently there's only two outside linebackers who finished the season on the 2016 53-man roster that are under contract for the 2017 season. Those two being Arthur Motes and Bud Dupree. We all know Bud Dupree's a starter. We all know Arthur Motes is just a reserve player at this point. Now Anthony Ciccolo will likely join that group here in a matter of days or weeks, being as how he's an exclusive rights free agent. We already mentioned James Harrison, but we fully expect if this team does not address the position with a big name during free agency, which I would be surprised if that happens, they're probably going to draft an edge rusher early on in the draft, if not the first round, then the second round, and then quite possibly double dip at the position as well too. So you could have two young kids coming in at the outside linebacker position. You have Bud Dupree, who really, I mean, let's face it, we could probably consider 2017 as truly being Bud Dupree's sophomore-ish year, if you will. You better make sure you have a coach in place that can take these younger players and run with them instantly. And I kind of wonder if Joey Porter is the right guy to do that.
Yes, I agree with you.
And it would be nice if if Kevin Green was the guy to do that. Kevin Green seems, I mean, just look at his track history. Now, look, he had Clay Matthews was already a talented guy coming out of college. So, Kevin Green had, had some help there. But, I mean, Kevin Green, I thought, did a great job during his years as a position coach with the Green Bay Packers, and they have some hardware to show for it. So it would be very disappointing if, indeed, the Steelers wind up moving on from Joey Porter, and they missed the whole chance to get Kevin Green into the, now, not saying that there aren't other great coaches out there that could fill the role, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next couple of weeks. And I assume the bat signal will be going up to AR2 here, maybe this week, if not this week, next week for sure. And to see if any of these staff changes take place ahead of that.
I agree with all of it. excuse me. So, all right. So that's the status of Joey. I don't know that there's anything else in terms of Steeler news. It was a very quiet week.
We talked a little bit about the Le'Veon Bell injury and the injury report and Mike Tomlin's comments on that last Tuesday and all. Now the league has come forward and saying that they're going to investigate the injury situation. Do you feel the Steelers were in the wrong here?
With the Le'Veon Bell situation?
Yeah, with not listing that groin injury.
I'll just go back to what I said on Friday, which is he played the last play against the Chiefs and he played the first play against the Patriots. So, I think Mike's answer of we could have put everybody on the list is a reasonable one. You know, he didn't get one carry in the game and then not play in the game. He got six carries. So I would not punish the Steelers. Now, look, I think I'm one of the first people. Look, I brought this up in the post-game show for after the New England game. I mean, I think it's a real topic, but I'm not on a witch hunt to, find them guilty on this. I do not think they should be punished because I can look at the activity of Le'Veon Bell and know that, basically there was no point in any of these games that he came out for injury. So, I mean, that to me is close enough to saying, it's not, if you put him on once, you want to leave him on. But they didn't put him on, and he didn't miss any time, so I'm good with it.
Here's where I I'm not ready to say that they should lose a draft pick or anything like that. Maybe a fine is in order of some sorts, but I think their failure – would we be having this discussion, David, if on – the Wednesday ahead of the AFC Championship game, instead of not injury related, Bell was listed with a groin on Wednesday. And then, of course, he did not practice on Thursday. He was excused. Had it been listed groin there along with coach's decision on Thursday, would we be even having this conversation right now?
Well, no, because that's what we're talking about. Was he listed? So if he was listed, then, wouldn't be having it, right?
I think the biggest mistake that he had was not listing him with because look, even if you list him with a groin on, and here I am speculating about groins. If you list him on Wednesday and Thursday with a groin injury, and then he comes back and practices on Friday fully, well, then you can simply remove him from the injury report, right? I mean, don't we see this time in, time out, now that the probable designation is no more, that players start the week on the injury report on Wednesday and possibly Thursday, and then Friday they're technically removed because they're not giving a status for the upcoming game. So I think the big thing that the league will look into is, and especially judging by Bell's comments after the game, that this is something that he's been managing for more than just one game. I think that's where the league will look at it. And I would not, I don't think it's to the point where you take away draft picks or anything like that, but maybe a $100,000 fine is in order.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think they're going to have I think they're going to have trouble, you know, finding kind of some substance behind this. I mean, as much, you know, and it's just going to be, it's competition committee. It's going to be, you know, look, every guy has bumps and bruises. It's going to be, you want me to go, you know, the Bill Belichick route of, you know, listing 42 guys on the injury report, because I can do that every week and he's not missing any time and he hasn't really missed any practice time. That would be unusual. So, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm guessing nothing happens, but we'll see, and we'll see how the Richard Sherman thing plays out as well.
Do you think the injury report is a joke anyway? I mean, is there what?
I don't think it's a joke. I think it's hard to. I think different teams use it different ways, so it's hard to get a sense. But I think it serves its purpose, and I think. I think we generally know information is out there that it's the rare occasion where a guy completely unexpectedly doesn't play or completely unexpectedly plays on a Sunday. There's so much, so many people and so much vested interest in fantasy and gambling and everything else that information gets out there. I don't think it's a joke.
I don't think they moved in the right direction this past offseason with eliminating probable. That's just me. But, look, I mean, are more and more coaches now going to start taking the Bill Belichick route and listing 15 guys on a Wednesday, you know, and then go from there? I don't know, you know. But I don't think Tomlin did himself any service by not putting – the groin on there for Bell on Wednesday and Thursday. So I'll leave it at that.
Hey, Steeler fans, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than the Steelers scoring a touchdown in the playoffs after the first two quarters. Let our buddy Craig Oxane guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you get the home of your dreams, even in Houston. If you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxane today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And Dave, back at it. Oh, Dave, I was a couple things. As I was reading some pregame analysis of Steelers-Patriots this week, post-game, obviously. I was reading some pregame analysis. And it is just curious how many people had the same view of, you know, what the Steelers needed to do. And I was on Showdown last night, and I know some people have resorted to the argument that, well, when the Steelers did blitz, and whether you think it was three times or five times or six times, whatever, Brady was effective, so that would not have been an effective tactic. And I'm guessing you're in my camp with that's a pretty darn small sample size. And the other tactic wasn't effective. At least we've seen that when they have blitzed, you know, the one time they did have success, they blitzed pretty heavily and they were able to hit Brady and it made a difference. That's what happened with Houston. It's what has gotten the Steelers defense kind of on the right track, I think, since week eight when the Steelers, you know, even though I asked Mike specifically and he denied it, kind of changed their philosophy and increased their blitzing by 100%, really, from what they were doing. I mean, is your view still, you look back and say, you know, it was a bad defensive game plan?
Well, I went into this knowing that the Steelers had to be careful when they did blitz Tom Brady because he's so damn good at reading your mail, as we talked about. And I don't know if you saw the article that Daniel did a few days ago about the time to snaps and versus the rush and all like that. But with a five or more man rush, Tom Brady's average snap to throw time was 2.21 seconds. That's plenty of time for me to get in about three He was 6 for 6, 117 yards, and a touchdown. Had a perfect passer rating on 5 or plus man rushes. Now, the whole thing comes. Blitzes in the eye of the beholder as far as men go, right? I mean, if you send if you send four and one of them's a safety or a cornerback, is it really a blitz? You know, so we can look at it that aspect as well. So, you know, against a four-man rush, Tom Brady's average time to release after snap was 2.69 seconds, and he had a passer rating of 130.5. The three-man rush is when Tom Brady had his lowest passer rating of 90.2. He was 14 of 20 for 143 yards. His average snap to throw time was 2.49 seconds. I guess I'm getting to all this is because I think in that second half, David, what I would have done is would have constantly tried to send at least five guys after Brady, knowing that he would have to get rid of the football quicker, and then I take my chances of tackling the catch or drop at that point, because they obviously weren't going to play any bump and run or anything like that. I wish they would have, but they didn't. It was just a failed game, defensive game plan all the way around. That, looking at the tape, the all 22 of it, it doesn't look like much change during the second half. And oh boy, when Tom Brady did have time to throw, he carved them up. And when he didn't have time to throw, they did a lousy job of tackling the catch. So I mean, what was your overall question? Did I not like the defensive game plan? I mean, no, I did not. As far as answers of what could have went different. Remember, this was a one score game at halftime, right?
17-9, and you know, certainly felt like it should have been 17-13 at least.
If I'm gonna go down knowing what I saw happened in the first half, and if I wasn't going to play a lot of bump and run or knock some of these receivers off the line, especially out of the slot, I would have sent numbers after Tom Brady and say, look, bang him around as best as you can. Make that football come out quickly, and then let's take our chances at you know, limiting him to, you know, 5 to maybe 6 yards, average yards per attempt at that point.
Well, I know you're going to like this. I don't know if you got to see it. It was posted over the weekend by Chase Stewart, who is I think you're familiar with, who writes for footballperspective.com. Matt Ryan and Tom Brady finished the season ranked first and second in the NFL in adjusted net yards per attempt. How unusual is that? He talks about the Super Bowl matchup, and he goes through and said 66. He talks about Bart Starr, and he talks about Staubach in 71 and with Greasy. Marino in 84 with, you know, in Montana. He said that's it. The chart below shows the average net yards per attempt rankings for the two quarterbacks that started each Super Bowl. And the Super Bowls following the 69, 72, 74, 79, 87, 90, and 2012 Super Bowls, one starter didn't have enough regular season attempts to qualify for the crown. So he put them on line 40. It's not often that you get guys, Dave, who are 1-2 as in fact, you know, never. Maybe it happened once, but your favorite stat, the two guys are in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I guess, I've always tracked offensive average yards per passing attempt as part of the differential and all. And you know, obviously, if you have a good quarterback and you have a high number, that means you're getting some explosive plays in there as well. You know, it'd be interesting to find out is what is the average yard per passing attempt for raw air yards of those two players? In other words,
yeah.
You get what I'm willing to bet that Matt Ryan's average yard
is higher than Brady.
Right, it's higher than Brady. I guess what I'm getting at is how good of job do the Patriots and Tom Brady do at getting the football in the hands of their players after the catch and getting the proverbial hidden yardage yak stats. You know, and I think, look, Tom Brady's not not been one that takes a lot of shots deep, right? I mean, he doesn't have to, in fact, generally. Matt Ryan, on the other hand, when you have a guy like Julio Jones and you see how they're able to stretch the field and all, he takes a lot of deeper shots than Tom Brady. So maybe that's a new stat to start tracking, is average yards per passing attempt. Air yards, you know, something along those lines. But it just goes to show you that I think the biggest takeaway, and correct me if you feel different here, is there's some chunk plays mixed in there, chunk ability.
Sure. Sure. And look, you know, I think everybody looks at these two offenses and, you know, I think it's hard to argue the Falcons haven't been the best offense in the NFL this year. And the Patriots are right up there. So, you know, we always talk about, you know, when you and I had this debate halfway through the season, would you rather have a great defense or a great offense? It's the great offenses that made it this year. We saw last year it was the great defense that won. It just shows that, you know, there's different years, different things, and great is defined different ways. The Broncos had maybe an all-time great defense last year. I don't know if the Falcons go and put up 40 this year. If they weren't playing, let's put it this way. If the Falcons were playing anybody but the Patriots or the Steelers right now, we would be talking. There'd be a lot more conversation about comparing them to the greatest show on turf and that type of stuff. The Falcons, by the nature of who they are and who they're playing, they are the second fiddle in terms of media attention. They're the, you know, they're the stepchild, and they would have been with the Steelers as well. But it doesn't take anything away from the unbelievable offensive season they had. And somebody was asking me last night, you know, who are their weapons, you know, once you get past Julio Jones? Well, you know, Sanu's been good. He wasn't great all year. Tyler Gabriel, I think, was the big find. And their two running backs are just so dynamite and can do, you know, they can both do a lot of things. I don't think you think of either of them as kind of big between the tackle runners, but they're both very capable. So they're fun to watch offensively, and they get a lot of guys involved.
A good quarterback and a good offense can obviously, I think, get you into the playoffs. I think at some point, and I've said this several times, during the postseason, teams will need their defense to win them one, maybe two games. And you know, we'll find out. I think, and we hit this at the top of the show, I think we'll find out if the Atlanta Falcons have a good enough defense to win one of those games, because I mean they've given up some points this year, right? The Falcons have. You go back and look at it's hard to believe the Falcons started off the season 0-1, losing to Tampa Bay, but they beat the Raiders, the Saints, the Panthers, the Broncos. Now they held the Broncos to 16 points, but they gave up 33 points to the Panthers and won that game. They gave up 32 points to the Saints and won that game. They gave up 28 points to the Raiders and won that game. You go and I mean, just go down their schedule and you can see where there have been times where they've given up quite a few points to the opposition here. And then what have they done during the postseason here? The Falcons, I'm trying to pull this up real quick. They gave up 20 to the Seahawks. Good job there. And they gave up 21 to the Packers. So a good job there. They're probably going to have to keep the Patriots to what? 24 points?
I don't
know.
I mean, if this was 38-35, I wouldn't be shocked.
True. I would increase their odds, though, if they are able to hold the Patriots to 24 or lower. So, all right. Which direction we hit on Porter? We hit on Bell. We hit on some Super Bowl stuff. You want to talk about some
Pro Bowl?
Oh no, it was a better game than most, I think, right?
Yeah, I got to say, I watched it with one eye. I didn't pay close attention. I saw Kirk Cousins run down the field and break up a long return of an interception. So that was something.
All right. That concludes our talk about the Pro Bowl.
That's about all I got to offer. I saw them featuring, I didn't have sound on. I saw them featuring Ryan Shazier at one point, talking about what he did. I don't know if he did anything that was notable.
He looked like he was playing. I'll give him that. I mean, he made some nice plays, I thought, during that game, for sure. All right, let's talk about some of these unrestricted free agents and maybe some salary cap here, David. I'm going to go through this list of free agents here, and you tell me whether or not they'll be back And any other thoughts? Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, undoubtedly be back.
Franchise tag. I think the only question with Le'Veon Bell becomes, are you able to work out a long-term deal with him in the meantime? You know, after you tag him, I don't like the prospects of them signing him to a long-term deal prior to the tag deadline. So, I think he'll get the tag, and then we'll sit and wait to see whether or not he gets a long-term deal. And like it or not, the Steelers can probably stomach him riding the 2017 season on the tag. So I think we both agree that he'll be back next season for sure. Lawrence Timmons.
You know, I stood at the start of the offseason saying kind of basically 100-0 that he wouldn't start of the season, that he wouldn't be back. I'll say it's 70-30. It's not guaranteed, but I think it's, you know, significantly more likely than less likely.
I'll go on the over of yours percentage wise. I think the question becomes what can they sign him for? What's too much?
I think anything over $5 million is too much.
I would agree, and several people listening to this podcast will probably write us and tell us $5 million is too much. And if they could get him 3.5 area, you know, on a 2 or 3 year deal, obviously there wouldn't be a big signing bonus involved. So you're not married to him past, you know, the next two seasons. I still like the chances of Timmons returning, although I hope they figure out a way to get him off the field more, 2017 moving forward, if indeed he is back. I like his chances a little bit more of returning than you do, obviously. Jarvis Jones.
Zip.
I would agree. He shouldn't have a high price tag on him regardless, but it's time to let him go elsewhere and try to figure out his pass rush, which I don't think he'll ever be able to do. D'Angelo Williams.
I'm gonna say that this is unlikely. And the reason is I think the Steelers are definitely gonna draft a running back. They've got, you know, Fitz Toussaint and Carlos Williams. The young running back's going to make the team. The young running back's going to be involved. I think Bell's going to be involved. I don't see it. I think a 1 year, $2 million, not $2 million deal is not a bad deal, but I think you wait until after the draft and see where you are, like you did with Gradkowski last year. And I think, you keep him on hold, put him in the James Harris thing from a couple years ago. And if you need him in September or in August, you give him a call, but I would not be signing him here in the early part of free agency.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the timing aspect here because let me ask you this, does D'Angelo Williams have something to offer a team?
Yeah, I think as a veteran presence, a guy who can carry the ball five times a game and catch some passes and do some stuff, he can still play in the league, yes.
In late March, by late March, will D'Angelo Williams have received some interest from another team?
Oh, I don't know. That's good. Yeah, maybe his agent would be negligent not to, you know, make a bunch of phone calls just to see what's out there. But I don't think it'd be signed.
If he was willing to take $2 million, would you sign him before the draft?
No, I wouldn't.
I would tend to hope that maybe they would, but I obviously there's no guarantee. Look, you can still re-sign him and still draft a running back wherever you want in the draft, and hope that you know can be your guy moving forward here. I think there are some serious. I mean, with the age of D'Angelo Williams and what happened with his knee during the 2016 season, I think there are legitimate health concerns of whether or not he can play a full season. So that needs to be taken into account as well. Although, I mean, if you have a healthy D'Angelo Williams at the start of the season and you don't have to use him very much, maybe he can be an asset for you at some point throughout the season. So I would put that probably a little higher chance than you would, but even so, I'd put it probably 50-50 chance that he's back. It wouldn't surprise me if he is re-signed. But I think if you were going to re-sign him, you would probably have to do that before the draft. But we'll see as it relates to him. James Harrison.
I'll put it at 85%. You know, pretty good chance James is back. I would imagine on opening day, James Harrison's the Steelers starter. And I would hope that on not through injury or anything else, but because somebody else is playing lights out, that at the end of the season, he's not the starter. So I'm guessing James is back, and he's, you know, nobody's going to unseat him from here to there. You know, even if you draft a first round pick, I don't know that he's going to be starting on opening day. Maybe he is. That's my guess.
Yeah, remember a couple of years ago, we had discussions, and I believe I put him in my initial 53-man roster or prediction even before he had been resigned, and I think you didn't think he was going to be back, and even now I'm surprised he's played this long. But with that said, they almost have no choice but to resign him during this offseason, and I hope he can start and play until until one of these potential draft picks are able to take over midway through the season. So I will be shocked if Harrison is not back fairly quickly at that. Marcus Wheaton.
Marcus Wheaton, zip. I mean, you know, Marcus Wheaton is a guy who I would love to have back on a, you know, $1.5 million deal, something like that. But no room at the end.
I would agree, and I think somebody's going to pay him too much money on top of it. Does he have a potential to be the next Emmanuel Sanders? In other words, a change of scenery, and this guy catches 70 passes and 7 touchdowns or more?
I don't think it'll be I love Manny Sanders, so I got a special spot for him. I don't think he'll ever be Manny Sanders, but he might be Manny Sanders light.
Okay, agreed. I think we both agree he won't be back. We've had this conversation about Landry Jones quite a bit. Landry Jones, I don't think he'll be back. You tend to think there's a chance.
Yeah, I hope he's back. And just because, more as much as anything, he knows the system, and I don't want him to draft a quarterback quite yet. But I think they will. So I'm hoping he's back.
Can you imagine the outrage if that happens? Look, this quarterback class is not good in my.
Well, it's not good at the top. People keep saying that, but I think it's because there's not a clear cut, you know, top five pick. I'm not sure it's terrible in rounds, you know, 3 through 6, 2 through 6. I mean, there are names out there, and you know, I know you're not a huge fan necessarily of Peterman or whatever, but. I do look at Peterman with a little bit of the Kirk Cousins thing. He's a very smart guy, cerebral guy. He can make the throws. Doesn't have the biggest arm, but he's not going to kill you. Now, is that Alex Smith or Kirk Cousins or whatever? Maybe, and that maybe isn't very exciting, but it'd be exciting as a backup.
Could you see the Steelers both re-signing Landry Jones and spending a draft pick on a quarterback?
Yeah, but I wouldn't think it would be a top three pick then. Well, I don't think they're going to go quarterback in the first two rounds regardless. But starting in round 3, I think, you know, my target's been 3 through 5. If they sign Landry Jones, I would move that back to 4 through 7.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'll be putting a quarterback in probably round 4 or later in some of my upcoming mock drafts.
I guess you're gonna punch me in the face too, right?
Because absolutely,
I'm gonna draft a defensive lineman somewhere along the way.
I'm looking for the button here on Skype.
Yeah, boom. Knock my block off.
And here's my thoughts on defensive linemen, David. I think I've kind of made this clear. I mean, you've got Hargrave, you got Hayward, you have Tuitt. Those are your guys. I thought LT Walton represented himself well this season.
I did too. I thought he did fine down the stretch.
To think that there's still something there. Daniel McCullers, I've never been high on Daniel McCullers, but he is still under contract. And look, they seem to have some glimmer of hope for Johnny Maxey, and that's not saying much based on what we've seen and the amount of snaps that he's played so far. You know, and I think my statement was, don't mock one to the Steelers before round seven. I'll move that up around. I'll give you a round leniency. I will be disappointed if I see a mock or the Steelers ultimately draft a defensive lineman ahead of round six. And I'll leave it at that. I just don't see the need that other people and you potentially see.
I guess I like the idea of let me use it in the negative fashion. I would prefer that Cam and Tuitt did not play every play. And, you know, I realize Hargrove can take some of those snaps, and, you know, we can talk forever about how often are they in base and how you're going to use guys. But I just, you know, you look at some of the best teams and, you know, even their stud, you know, all pro bowl type guys are playing, you know, 60-70% of the snaps. I feel like if the Steelers had one more really good defensive lineman, everybody would be better because of it. So I'm not going out in the first round or the second round or getting a D lineman, but, you know, third or fourth round, again, if they see a guy they like, and it, you know, I would, to me, it'd be more of an end type, you know, edge guy. So again, you know, maybe when we talk hybrids, maybe I'm getting a little too technical about, you know, what I'm defining here, but I'd like to see another guy. Look, you watch that Patriots game, and we all kind of have to step back and say, you know, how much does the defense need to be upgraded, and is corner still a position of need? Because I used to, and maybe I'm wrong, I used to make the argument that, you know, you got Artie Burns, and he hopefully is in place for, you know, 7, 8, 10 years for the Steelers, ideally. And that Cockrell is an average NFL corner, and you're getting Golson, who can maybe be an upgrade on Gay eventually. You know, who knows with Golson. And you've got Gilbert, who's a, you know, complete wild card lottery ticket. But maybe that's silly. Maybe the Steelers need to go corner in the first two rounds and upgrade on Cockrell. If they, you know, I don't think somebody's coming in. I'll be shocked if Ross Cockrell's not the starting corner in week eight, even next year. But maybe I'm being a bit naive about how good the Steelers' corners are.
Well, here's the thing. They have a spot for a corner, potentially. I mean, Gay's going to, like it or not, people listening, Gay's going to be on this 53-man roster. You agree?
Well, I'm not as definitive as you are. I don't think all of Gay, like I said last week, I'll bet that Gay, Hayward, Bay, and Motes, I'll bet all three aren't back. And I'm not sure which I think is the least likely, but I just don't think all these guys are coming back at age, you know, 30.
Okay. Burns will be there. Cockrell will be back on a 1 year exclusive.
Yeah, Cockrell will be on the team.
Right, Steele. We don't even know how to guess on Cinquez Golson. I mean,
you have to assume if he's healthy, he's going to be on the team, right? I mean, I just have to think that if he's healthy, he's going to get a shot.
Exactly. I mean, if all you can get is special teams out of him, then you got to take it, right? With Cinquez Golson, barring an injury, and that's a big bar, I expect him to be on the team. Justin Gilbert. Boy, if they went out and traded,
you're paying him. You're paying him.
Yeah, if they went out and traded for him, and he's not on this team, and look, I realize it was only a six round, a 2018 sixth round draft pick. You better find a way to utilize him. I think Gay is there as well too. So.
The question is, I guess, you know,
you can carry. You can carry six.
Gay, Shabazz, and Gilbert, they're not all three going to be on the team.
Right, probably not Shabazz. That's the easy.
And then if they draft a corner, you got to assume, you know, you make the assumption that if you draft a corner the first four rounds, he's making the team for sure. You really got to screw up. And then, you know, we've seen round five corners not make the team plenty of times, so I won't lock them in. So that's the question: is do they think poorly enough of the upside of the Cockrell Gilbert potentially Golson situation where they're going to draft a corner in round two or three, and you know
let the rest of
them would be goodbye, you know, Gilbert or Gay, one of them definitely gone.
All right, and it's possible. I'm not going to rule out because of the uncertainty, you know. At and depth at the position.
You gonna mock him a corner in the first four rounds?
Am I?
Would you think if you were guessing? I wouldn't have. I wouldn't even. I think I said a month ago they won't draft a corner. Period. I don't know. You know, I don't know what to think now.
I don't think you can rule it out. I'll leave it at that in the first four rounds. So much uncertainty regarding Golson. Heck, we haven't even seen him in a football stadium yet with the Steelers. And then Gilbert, if you can't get him on the field at some point, you know, more than they did this year, what makes you think you're going to be able to get him on the field more next year, I guess? You know,
right. He better be the kick returner next year.
They couldn't even get him on the field but a handful of times to do that either. So, I guess I'm not going to be shocked to see a cornerback mocked in the second round or a cornerback mocked anywhere after that as we sit here right now. And I'm undecided where I will mock one at this point, but I probably will mock one. Shamarco Thomas.
You know, there's room for a safety like Shamarco. Shamarco's a good kid who never got it on the defense. So does he sign a Darius Hayward Bay type deal to come back? I put it at 20%.
I mean, look, the only way he's coming back is on a minimum deal anyway and no guarantees, right? So I'll go with you on the 20%. I mean, if he wants to fight for a special team spot, you know, in a fourth safety, I suppose. So and that's only if he signs a one-year deal for the minimum. That's the only way I see it. Greg Warren.
Yeah, why not? You know, as long as he can do – as long as he's physically able, and I didn't see any signs that he wasn't. You know, he and Ben might walk out the door at the same time 4 or 5 years from now. So, you'll sign a UDFA to bring in and take a look, but he's not costing you anything and all good where that rides. So, yep.
Yeah, and that might happen fairly quickly here. Another one of those 1 year minimum benefit salary contracts that comes with a reduced salary cap charge. He's made a living at doing that, so I expect him back as well too. David Johnson.
If he wants to come to camp, sure. I don't think he's going to get a job anywhere else. So I'll put him at 25% making the roster, kind of 60% he comes to camp.
And, of course, the only way he comes back is on another one of those minimum deals with a reduced salary cap charge. That's not going to happen ahead of the draft, for sure. And ahead of the start of free agency and all like that, it's not going to happen. I think regardless of what his cost is, it's just time to use a spot of that 90-man roster for somebody else. So I'm gonna bet against him being resigned. And even if he is resigned, I don't like his chances of making the 53. Here's an interesting name, Ricardo Matthews.
Yeah, I like Ricardo Matthews. What's his deal? $800,000? I mean, you know, again, he's a guy who, if he wants to sign the same deal, I'm bringing him to camp. And you know, if he wants a, you know, $30,000 of that, you know, whatever, a signing bonus of, you know, minimum amount to not go out and test the market elsewhere, fine. He's going to have trouble making the roster. Obviously, if they don't draft a lineman, he probably makes it as the, you know, depending on how you want to count LT Walton. But, you know, 6D linemen. You could bring back all six and Maxie again to the practice squad. I could live with that. I'd like to see him come back to camp because I think he's an NFL type player. So the more of those you have, the better. And if he doesn't make the team, he doesn't make the team. So I'll put him at dead 50%.
And because, look, he signed a one-year minimum salary benefit contract the last time around. His cap number was lower because of that. It was $600,000. You would have to think that he's not going to get a better offer than that, I wouldn't think, from another team during free agency. It would behoove him if the Steelers offered him another one of those deals for him to take it. And I like the chances of that happening with no guarantee. You know, obviously with a contract like that, you're not obligated to guarantee him anything past training camp. So I think that might ultimately happen. I don't think you have to do that ahead of the draft either. I think you wait until after the draft, see what you get either via the draft or undrafted free agents, and then look at your entire. He's not going to blow anybody away with his play on the field, but it was an upgrade over Cam Thomas for whatever that was worth. And he is a guy that can give you 15-20% of the snaps if you need him. So I like his chances of being back with no guarantees he makes a 53-man roster. Cody Wallace.
Well, you and I kind of disagreed. If his knee's healthy, I bring him to camp. I don't know that there's a roster spot for him, but, you know, what are the odds a lineman gets hurt during training camp? Cody Wallace is a tough dude. You know, is B.J. Finney Cody Wallace now? I mean, is he taking that spot and run with it? We both think he played very well, and he's guaranteed to make the roster. So I guess it's, I'm assuming Cody doesn't have any practice squad eligibility. Yeah, I'd bring him back, but he's probably better off looking for a job elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm against them bringing him back, but if they did, it would obviously be for the minimum, and there would be no reason to get upset because he's not guaranteed a roster spot. As you said, you never know how injuries can play out. With that said, not that he had best days, his best days that you could say are behind him. There are no best days ahead of him. So I think you'd be better. It's another one of those situations where I think even on a 90-man roster, you'd be better served to use that on a different player to look at. So I wouldn't be shocked. I won't be banging the table if he is re-signed. I just don't see the value in re-signing him. One final one. Steven Johnson.
Again, same deal. If they want to do it on the terms of bring him to camp, no guarantees. He's, again, a guy who's probably not going to get a ton of offers anywhere else in the league. He was a useful guy. But, again, he's probably superseded now by Matakevich, all that stuff, all the time we spent talking about, who was going to be the last guy on the roster. L.J. Fort, I'd take Matakevich and L.J. Fort over him. So, again, he wants to come to camp, great. Probably, less than 50% chance he makes the roster.
Of all these kind of fringe guys, I would be more kind of in favor of him being invited to camp on another minimum deal just because of what he gives you as a special teamer. And that's obviously why he was signed last offseason, because it's too bad he went down injured, early on in the season with, an ankle injury or something like that. But I'm not going to lose sleep either way with Steven Johnson, because there are other guys out. As you mentioned, Matakevich can hopefully continue to fill the role as the special teams / inside emergency guy on top of it. So one of those where it just doesn't matter category, what actually happens with him. All right, real quick, the restricted free agents, you expect Hubbard to be tendered at a right of first refusal level. Ross Cockrell, I clarified his situation with Joel Corey, former NFL agent. David, even though he wasn't drafted by the Steelers originally, the Steelers can put a low original round right of first refusal tender on Ross Cockrell. And should he end up signing elsewhere, they would get a fourth round draft pick as compensation. So that's clearly, if indeed that information Joel Corey gave me is true, and I have no reason to think that it's not, it makes no sense to give him anything more than the low-level tender amount, which will be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1.9 million. And, that should sew up the Steelers' two restricted free agents.
Okay, pretty straightforward. So who we got to get to? We got to get to our man. Craig Oxing, and Craig, Steeler Nation knows about Craig. With mortgage rates near all-time lows, if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, get to our buddy Craig Oxing at First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender who we'd love to re-sign. He'd like the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. Call Craig today at 855-961-7763, 855-961-7763. Email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee equal housing lender.
All right.
But yeah, we will, you know, we'll try and get some guests in here over the next, like we did with Alex. Maybe we'll get Hokey Bro, get his thoughts on some of the Steelers offseason, and some other folks in here as well, some former players that, you know, we haven't done a lot of that in the offseason, but as we, you know, look to fill some time, we'll try to entertain you so you don't have to listen to just Dave and I for, you know, 3 hours a week.
And we'll talk salary cap on Wednesday. We hope to get to some of that today, but we didn't. So we'll talk salary cap future in some of these contracts coming up, potential contracts as well, too. You can follow me on Twitter, at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Find a donate button. You'll be taken to PayPal, where you can make a secure donation to David and myself. That's got it.
Yeah, and we don't say it enough, but the donations, obviously we've got a sponsor in Craig, which is great for us, but your donations mean a ton to us. Thank you for the work we do. They do help with servers and equipment, and Dave's gonna have to do some stuff about recording equipment, so that's what the money goes to. You know, all of that's greatly appreciated, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.